Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
Well, welcome back, everyone. It's Sean Murray, host of today's edition of the New Cyber Frontier. In today's edition, we welcome Chris McDaniels. Chris is the president and CEO of Cyber Tactics Training and Technology, otherwise known as CT Cubed. They're based out of Las Vegas, Nevada. They also have a local office here in the Colorado Springs area, where our studio is for the New Cyber Frontier. Chris is a former Air Force trainer and a veteran. Thank you for your service, Chris. Welcome to the New Cyber Frontier.
Hey, Sean. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, you know, so, yeah, you and I have known each other for just over a year now, and we have a colleague that is actually part of your company, Eric Bailey. Eric and I have known each other for quite some time, and that's how we got introduced. And you guys are doing some great things out there with your company. Can you give us a little bit about your background?
Sure. Yep. So just like Eric Bailey, I cut my teeth in cybersecurity thanks to the Air Force. So I spent a few years at the Air Force CERT doing forensics and incident response there. Then they sent me off to the Air Force Weapons School to learn about the other ways that the Air Force employs cyber operations, the other lines of effort. Went out to the Pacific Theater. I did some non-kinetic planning and talked about how cyber could integrate into the way we fight, you know, wars and fight and plan wars. And then went back to the weapons school, taught for a few years before I did a little bit of time on the Air Force Red Team. And then separated, started CT Cubed with a few smart folks I met along the way in the Air Force, and been doing that for the last few years.
That's awesome. So you've got a training background, you got a military background, some warfighter background, supporting warfighter. You know, what is it that CTQ does today? Who are your customers? What are you guys doing?
A lot of what we do, we don't sell any, you know, magic bullet that solves all the security issues. We're not a product company. So we mainly do services and consulting, a lot around those three lines of effort: tactics, training, and technology. So a lot of times companies will bring us in under the guise of some sort of technology problem they're having. But as we really dig into it, it turns out to be more of communication issues or planning issues that almost always solve the day. So I'm sure you've seen this as you've gone out and interacted with customers. You'll have a customer that's using technology X, and they are counting down the days until they can throw that thing out of their environment because it's just so terrible. Then you go across the street, and you have a different customer that is using technology Y, and they are counting down the days until they can throw that thing out of their environment because they're going to replace it with technology X, which will solve all of the issues. Right? So it turns out that a lot of people have paid for technologies that they never really got 100% implemented, and they're not using all the functionality for, and they don't understand how it, you know, best integrates within their environment so that they can actually get the value they paid for. And so a lot of times we just help people look at what they've already got, help them maximize what's there. And then, and only then, do we start looking at the rest of their program and where they may want to look at investing in new people, processes, technology at that point.
So in that hits on an area that I've seen as well, talking with companies who sell different types of technologies. We're going to come back and we're going to have a discussion on that topic specifically, and we'll get your thoughts on how to solve some of those problems, because as you indicated, some of them are process-oriented, some of them are people or communication-oriented, and you know, we've got some examples that we can talk about. We're going to be right back. We're on the podcast today with Chris McDaniels, president and CEO of CyberTac. Tactics Training Technology, otherwise known as CT Cubed. Welcome, Chris. We'll be right back.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the new Cyber Frontier. I'm Sean Murray, host of today's edition. We have Chris McDaniels, president and CEO of CT Cubed. We were just having a conversation regarding some of the problems that our clients have when we go in. They perceive that they have a certain type of problem, and then after an investigation, we normally find there's a communication problem that's the root cause of whatever problem with X or Y technology. I had a conversation not too long ago with a senior VP of sales for some of these technologies, and one of the things that they find is that their solution costs millions of dollars, and their sales team does not always do a great job of communicating all of the requirements that the client has to do, all that homework prior to his company showing up with the technology. And then the next thing you know, they're behind schedule, and that's that communications gap that sometimes gives the client a bad taste in their mouth, and he's trying to solve that problem. Can you elaborate on some of those issues that maybe you've seen with your client along those lines?
Yeah, you bet. So a lot of times the issue comes into, like you said, doing the homework up front before they implement the technology. So if you have a salesperson that's exceptionally good at what they do, they may sometimes sell a solution into an organization that's just not ready for it, which is unfortunate. And so if you have, say that you've brought on a tool that does some of the new the automation and orchestration hotness that's out there nowadays. If you don't have a process to automate, that tool is going to give you limited value, right? So how do you automate some of your incident response procedures if you don't have a documented incident response plan? So that's one example, and I think that's the biggest issue we see. The other issue we see is where the client is really sold on the solution, but they don't quite have the budget to fully execute. And so they take shortcuts on some of the hardware or software requirements to make that solution work. And then it just doesn't ever perform as advertised. And so it's, you know, sometimes it is better if you can't really afford to resource it appropriately, both from a hardware software perspective and from your on-site staff to take care of the care and feeding of the product. It may be better to wait and either implement something that's a little bit smaller, one of their smaller offerings, or wait and put that in your roadmap for a future year when maybe you have more budget.
Yeah, that makes more sense, right? So implement something that's more practical, more feasible, that you'll be able to implement and get at least whatever that checklist of things that you want get accomplished until you can budget for. Or get, you know, to the preferred solution later on. And again, it comes down to communication. What can I do ahead of time, and what must I do ahead of time once I have that budget? What does the schedule look like? Are there any constraints or any other opportunities at that point? You know, from a computer network defense perspective, and you've got a lot of experience on that side, how do you think companies are doing today? Do you see more implementation of technologies on-prem, or do you see more cloud service providers providing those capabilities for your clients?
Seeing a definite shift to a cloud service mentality, which I think is the right answer. So again, it's not a silver bullet. It's not an easy button. It brings with it an entirely new set of security challenges. But a lot of SaaS solutions, I think, are finding that if they take the hardware away from the client, they can get rid of that entire set of issues. Right. So, I don't want to use any specific vendor names, but if unless your organization has compliance reasons why you just absolutely cannot use any sort of cloud-based solution, including the government-friendly cloud-based solutions out there, I am seeing a real trend that way. And I think the product and the quality of the offering that clients are seeing is going up with less administration that has to happen in-house. And then I think when you actually run all the numbers and look and consider the total cost of ownership in a lot of situations, the cloud-based offering is also saving them some money.
So that's great perspective. So here's the downside, right? This is where, again, we talk about communication. What is it? What are the questions your clients should be asking before they sign that master services agreement? What should be in the service level agreement for the clients to make sure they're getting what they expect? Of course, you know the vendor's not going to give you all the bells and whistles unless you ask for them or unless they can sell you on it. But what is it that your client should be asking for and should be tracking when they sign that contract?
Yeah, and I think that's where, you know, the answer there is it depends, which I'm sure is what you want to hear, right? It depends very much on the technology and the problem they're trying to solve. I think one step that a lot of clients miss is you should lay out some very clear use cases of why you're bringing on this technology in the first place and what problems you are trying to solve. And then you should ask the vendor to show you how their solution is going to solve those problems and how they back that up with their SLAs. And if they can't do that, you've automatically identified a disconnect. If they can do that in the contract phase and on paper, that's fine. But a lot of things don't work quite right when you actually put them into the environment. And so I'm also a big fan of whenever possible doing a proof of concept or a proof of value. Right? Even if you have to pay a little bit for that proof of concept, you know, to tell the vendor, if you can accomplish these objectives for us, A, B, and C, within these time windows and within these SLAs that we have written down and all agree upon, you know, then we will move forward with your solution at this price. And if a vendor is not willing to do that, it could just be that vendor is a big behemoth and your company is not quite big enough to make them have to make those accommodations. Or it could be that maybe they know their solution is not the right answer and maybe they're not the right fit.
Yeah, and that's the key point, right, is the collaboration with the vendor and then making sure that as well, once you have that arrangement underway, having the discussion with your procurement folks and your contracting legal folks, compliance folks, again, what is the service provider providing you for technology? And then what risks may be associated with whatever that service is? Are they collecting, process, transmitting, reviewing potential access to personal identifiable information, depending on the industry, and making sure that we cover those as well? Are those things that you recommend to your clients, and do they ask the right questions sometimes?
Yeah, I think they are getting better and better at it. Right? Again, no one's perfect out there. But clients are understanding the many, many important aspects that go into vendor management, right? There's entire vendor management frameworks out there. There's entire companies that deal with just helping you vet and select and manage your vendors. And so people are moving the right direction, but there's just no, you know, easy checklist of here's the things you want to ask your vendor, you know, as you well know, right? If you're dealing with them, international pharmaceutical company doing business in 120 different countries. What are the rules for how data is retained, stored, processed, transmitted? So again, we're more on the I'm more on the usability and operations side, and then I make sure that we've got compliance experts as well looking at those additional layer of requirements that maybe do not directly tie to usability, but they are a risk to your business if you fail to comply, right? And I think we're seeing some pretty big fines coming out of the European theater right about now, just because folks did not take that maybe seriously enough, or they just weren't aware of it.
Right. So, you know, you talk about the complexity. If you're a global business or you're doing business in multiple countries, the compliance or the regulatory space looks really complicated. We had an issue with, I had a biopharm that we were doing cybersecurity leadership for and trying to take a look at all of their automated solutions, because almost everything was a service provider. And they were starting to dabble in the European theater. And they didn't understand all the complexities of just GDPR and Brexit's coming. And, you know, we just got rid of the Safe Harbor Act and replaced that with Privacy Shield. And so they didn't understand all the complexities associated with some of the solutions that they already had as they were expanding. So good points. We're going to take a break at this point in time. I'm Sean Murray, host of today's edition of the New Cyber Frontier. We're talking to Chris McDaniels, who is the president and CEO of CT Cubed. We're going to take a break for our sponsor. We'll be right back. So welcome back, Sean Murray, host of today's edition of the New Cyber Frontier. Today we have with us Chris McDaniels, president and CEO of CT Cubed, based out of Las Vegas, a local office here in Colorado Springs. Let's talk about who your clients are. What industries are you looking at? And who are your clients today? Who are you solving problems for?
Our clients will be anybody that has concerns about their cybersecurity strategy and implementation. So if you can find any companies that care about cybersecurity right now, that's a good potential client for us. it's wide open. Yeah, we tend to trend towards just some of the larger enterprises, because we are finding that small and medium businesses, it's just hard to come up with a model that makes sense for everybody there, but we don't shy away from any business because they're too small. It just depends on the level of effort they're looking for us. But we think we really add value. Very complex organizations that have, usually several thousand geographically dispersed clients, and they have technologies from the host level all the way up through their outermost network perimeter to their, cloud-based presence, and they're trying to figure out, how do I make all of these technologies that I invested in actually integrate together, and how do I buy down the business risk for my organization? How do I increase the security of my organization without too much so impacting the usability and the mission of our organization? And so it's hard to put that on a one-pager, right? What is it that we do there? But the way we usually get engaged with a client is they realize they're having a specific technology issue. Our vulnerability scanner isn't doing this. Our SIM isn't doing this other thing. We think it's time to get rid of the SIM, to throw that thing out, bring another one in. Can you help us come in and evaluate what SIM we should bring in, and how we evaluate which one we go with, and then how do we get that SIM up and running and operational and useful? And so a lot of times when we have that conversation, it turns out getting rid of the SIM maybe isn't the right answer, and we can look at some other process issues and go from there.
So, we're talking a lot about your background. So your military background, working with the CERT, the Air Force Computer Network Defense, capabilities, and you're talking about some of your clients and helping them integrate, existing technologies. If it's a right idea to maybe consider some new technologies, it's usually a process, communication, or a human problem. So let's move to how are you guys looking at the integration of newer disruptive technologies when we're talking about network defense monitoring, like the Internet of Things or AI, artificial intelligence. There's so many new technologies that are out there that provide conveniences for organizations to increase productivity. But you have to, again, balance, the needs of the business with risk, as you indicated. How are you seeing these new disruptive technologies adapting to the current infrastructure and for some of your clients?
Yeah, so our going in stance there is, so I think any of this new technology, I'm all for it if it works, right? Just show me that it works in my environment and it solves a problem I have previously identified. I think a lot of solutions out there are solutions in search of a problem. Someone thought it would be a good idea, but no one can actually say where it's going to be implemented in the environment. So I don't care what the integrated, synergistic, machine learning, AI, deep learning buzzwords are. If they work for the problem sets the organization is trying to solve, and they can give you that solution reliably and at an affordable price point, we're all for it. And again, come up with your use cases of why you want to implement it, show what problem you are solving, and then do a proof of concept and proof of value in your actual environment to show that it gives you that good return. So there are two different concepts we use to get there before we decide on a technology. And I think one is how CIOs, CISOs, CSOs are communicating to their board. There's a really, this organization, the Advanced Cyber Security Center, earlier this year, they put out a really good white paper titled Leveraging Board Governance for Cybersecurity. And it's chock full of really good information about how those C-level executives can more effectively communicate with their board of directors to kind of adequately describe what the CISO problem set is and help them to adequately fight for resources. And one thing they laid out in the article there that I thought they did a really good job with is they said that the board, when the CISO is done talking to them, the board should be able to answer these three questions. And I thought they were spot on. What are the cyber risks to our organization and what specific assets are at risk? What is the organization's strategy to mitigate those risks relative to the value of those assets and how is success being measured? And is the organization well prepared for a major cyber incident? And I think all of the technology conversations that you have needs to tie directly back to your ability to communicate the answers to those questions to an executive board.
Yeah, these are really great points, and I love the three questions because that really encompasses at a board level, because it needs to be at a high level. We don't get into the weeds. We don't get into the details. That's for the operational staff, but the organization, the executive board needs to have an understanding of where the risks are, and then what is the ability for the organization to be able to respond to those risks, and then is it providing that level of protection for the risk for the organization to be able to withstand a cyber incident event, a breach, right? And then how often do we look at that? Do we incorporate it into other plans like our business continuity management? So disaster recovery, business continuity. Did you see those conversations taking place as well? Do you see maybe on the operational side? I know you guys focus on the implementation and functional capabilities of the technologies you guys implement. Do you often have conversations with other business units regarded to BCM type of activity?
We do, absolutely. So we do not shy away from the technological implementation, but a lot of times we have to, if we don't start with a solid strategy, we can be implementing a solution that's not actually adding value to the organization. So yeah, very quickly, we end up having to go communicate with other business units. Because I think one of the big things the CISO can do is if he can find a way to introduce some usability and convenience into the environment that helps out his peers while also increasing security, that's his best chance of success, right? If you just try and implement a solution in the name of security, you're always going to have problems. If you can make someone else's job easier, you can make them more effective while you also are making yourself more secure, they feel like you're doing them a favor, right? And everybody's winning. And so when you take a step back and look at it from that perspective, ransomware is still very prevalent out there, right? What is one of the best defensive strategies for ransomware attacks besides your standard, patching and maybe getting rid of some of those low-hanging vulnerabilities? One of your best defenses is having a solid business continuity and disaster recovery plan and backup strategy, right? Which most CISOs or a lot of CISOs do not think belongs in their job jar, right? But if you can go to the unit and say, I can reduce our risk of a ransomware attack by implementing this sort of backup solution. And by the way, we can also implement a backup solution, which makes it easier for our people to collaborate with external entities, to collaborate internally, to establish version control so documents aren't accidentally getting deleted. And I can do this within this set of technologies we've already invested in, or I can do this at this very low cost. I think that's the path to truth.
Yeah, it goes back to one of the problems you indicated early on in our broadcast here, and that's communication. And you know, one of the things that we do talk about amongst ourselves as peers is making sure that the CISO is having that strong collaboration with all of the other business units. At the end of the day, when we talk about balancing risk with cybersecurity, it really is, we don't want to implement so much security that we cripple the organization and create animosity. That's always been the perspective, but enabling the organization to do what it needs to do to be productive and to be successful and be profitable, but also recognizing those key business processes that are critical to the organization, identifying where those risks lie, if they're automated, which in 80% of the time in any industry they are, we recognize the ability to put a team together to help in that business continuity, disaster recovery, and selling that to each business unit so they understand the value that cybersecurity brings to the organization, because we're accustomed to doing business. We're not generating revenue, but we can help the organization understand how that value is implemented. Is that what you see?
We do, but I am trying to break that switch of thinking of cybersecurity as just a cost center by... If a CISO has those conversations with his peers and he understands the problems they are trying to solve and how they are generating revenue for the company, and he can help them generate revenue more effectively, I think those are the initial wins. This is a lot of times we work with CISOs that are new in the position. And so they're looking for how do I establish some credibility in my first year or two in the job. And I think there are almost always examples of where they can implement a security solution that they can very clearly say increases the revenue ability of that organization. And so, yeah, agree with everything you said there, except for we're really trying to find a way to break that that pure cost center paradigm that's around cybersecurity right now. And it's a difficult thing to do, but there are sometimes some examples out there, right? So if you the easy example there, say that someone was trying to do all of their backup in-house, right? Backup version control, DR capability in-house. And it took a team of 100 people and it took, 11 gigabytes of hardware and process and compute. And you can find a solution that lets you repurpose those people into other areas of your organization and gives you that as a service for a less cost with better end product to the users. You've now saved the organization money and you've increased revenue generating capability. And we just love finding examples where that happens.
Yeah, if you can tie it to a regulatory compliance focus area where you can and show the organization is either increasing efficiencies, which, you know, is money, or, you know, prevents the organization from being fined. Again, that provides value, right? And so, yeah, the strategies for the CISO to be able to work with the rest of the organization to show that it should be where the focus is at. Well, you know, we're getting to the end of our time, Chris, and I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts and your perspectives of what's going on in the industry. Any parting thoughts for us?
No, thanks again for the time. Again, a lot of the work that needs to be done in these cybersecurity programs, what we call basic blocking and tackling, it's about communication, it's about prioritization, it's about managing risk, it's about doing so in a cost-effective way. So, thanks for putting on this podcast and talking about these very important topics for people, as we're all out there trying to solve these problems together. And it's a difficult road. If there was an easy answer, there was a right answer, everybody would just do that and go home and take a nap. Unfortunately, that's not the way it is. So we'll continue to kind of get after it until all the bad guys are gone. Yeah.
Yeah. I think our work is going to be around for quite some time. Thank you, Chris. I'm Sean Murray, host of today's edition of the New Cyber Frontier. We've been speaking with Chris McDaniels, president and CEO of CT Cubed. Thanks again, Chris, for joining us for our podcast.
Enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.